All of the presidential candidates are campaigning in New York State today, with the exception of Republican Ted Cruz, who's in California. New Yorkers vote next Tuesday. California's primary, Jeremy, not until June 7th.
And we're talking about the candidates. Of course, now the question is there going to be another candidate who's not even on any of the ballots right now? I'm talking about Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. People are talking about whether he may end up being the Republican nominee. Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent, is with me here in the studio in Washington to talk more about this. Hi, Mara.
Hi.
So today's New York Times has a front page story about how Ryan is running a campaign to lay out his policy views right before the Republican National Convention this summer. Could he really become the nominee, and could the party stay together if he does?
I think that's a very good question, and I think it will be very hard because a majority of Republicans tell pollsters that even the Republicans who oppose both Trump and Cruz say the nominee should be someone running now. This idea of a deus ex machina, Paul Ryan parachutes in to the convention in Cleveland right now, is not popular with the grassroots of the Republican Party. But Paul Ryan is engaged in a vigorous effort to lay out an alternative vision of what it means to be a Republican, kind of the opposite of Trumpism. What he wants is something for his House candidates and Mitch McConnell's Senate candidates, a way that they can separate themselves from the top of the ticket if necessary, something they can grasp onto, although it might be a drowning man grasping at a razor. It is very, very hard for Republican candidates to divorce themselves from the top of the ticket. You saw how hard it was for Democratic candidates in 2010 and 2014 to divorce themselves from Barack Obama.
So he's thinking about Congress primarily right now.
Absolutely.
What about Donald Trump? He went on Fox and Friends to complain about how he's winning the popular vote but losing convention delegates to Ted Cruz, who swept all of Colorado's delegates over the weekend by winning their support in state party meetings. Trump called it corrupt.
They offer him trips. They offer him all sorts of things. And you're allowed to do that. I mean, you're allowed to offer trips and you can buy all these votes. What kind of a system is this?
Where do you see this going on the Republican side, Mara?
This is a big debate. By the way, Colorado was unusual because they didn't hold a primary. They merely distributed their delegates in this way. But even in places where there were primaries or caucuses and Trump won, Cruz has been better at working the shadow campaign of getting delegates who might be willing to go to him on the second ballot, even though they're bound to Trump on the first ballot. I think you're going to hear this a lot from the Trump campaign. This is the Trump battle cry. Paul Manafort, who has been brought in by Trump to run the convention for him, calls this Gestapo tactics.
Yeah.
He was brought in to bring some traditional campaign arts to the Trump campaign, which many Republicans describe as a stream of consciousness celebrity joyride. But the problem for Trump is he needs to win delegates, not just states, and he needs to win the allegiance of the living, breathing human beings who are the delegates. So in case he doesn't get 1,237 on the first ballot, he can have them on the second ballot. And the other interesting thing, I think, going for Trump here is that his argument strikes most Republican voters as inherently fair. And they also tell pollsters that they think even if they oppose Trump and Cruz, the majority of Republican voters say the nominee should be the person with the most delegates, not necessarily the person who gets 1,237.
Okay, well, we're facing a similar, if different, story on the Democratic side as well, and the question of superdelegates. But on ABC yesterday, Bernie Sanders was asked to explain how he won Wyoming's caucus and its delegates on Saturday, but is really not much closer to winning the nomination, even after winning 8 of the last 9 election contests.
In the last 3.5 weeks, we have reduced her margin by a third. I think the proper number is about 220 delegates or so that we are now behind. We're moving to New York State. We're moving to Pennsylvania. We're heading out west to California, Oregon, a lot of big states out there.
So when he says 220 delegates or so that we're behind, is not including the superdelegates, the party insiders who can vote any way they want at the convention and who have largely gone for Hillary Clinton. But Bernie Sanders seems to be saying he's still got a path.
He does. He's saying, don't count me out. I have a path. His path is to win all the remaining states by very large margins, about 56% of the remaining delegates. And the reason why that's hard is you saw it in Wyoming. He did win the caucuses there. But guess what? The delegates were split. Hillary Clinton got, I think, just about as much as he did because Democrats give out their delegates proportionately, not winner take all. So he has to make the case to the superdelegates that he's the best candidate, and they will switch to him if he starts beating her in pledged delegates. This is what happened in 2008. Hillary Clinton was ahead in superdelegates, but Barack Obama started winning everywhere else, and the superdelegates switched to him. And right now, she is still ahead in pledged delegates and the popular vote. Sanders needs to change that dynamic, and then he can get the superdelegates to come with him.
And it makes New York, the primary next Tuesday, so important on the Democratic side for sure. Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent, thank you so much.
Thank you.